I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. In October of 1985, a woman named Cherie Warren left work at a busy Salt Lake City office
to meet her estranged husband at a downtown auto dealership.
She never made it home. Cherie's car surfaced weeks later in Las Vegas.
In the parking lot of a hotel casino.
No one knows how it got there.
Strange. It was strange.
Both Cherie's estranged husband and her boyfriend raised suspicion for investigators.
I kind of thought that he might have done something.
But no arrests were ever made. In Cold Season 3, we dig into double lives, make new connections in the case, and examine the difficulty raised by reasonable doubt.
We want answers just as much as anyone else.
They have creeps like that now too, so nothing's changed.
That's the new Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie. Now available anywhere you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
Utah, USC. The Utes battle the Trojans for a chance to play in back-to-back Rose Bowls. Pac-12 championship game coverage on The Zone is presented by UCCU. Love where you back. Right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Hans and Scotty, 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone. You see him on TV, a football analyst for Fox, also a host radio in Seattle.
He's very handsome.
Very handsome. He is made for television, and
great
he joins
family
us now.
Man.
Brock Huard. Brock, how are you?
Hey, Brock.
I'm doing great, boys. It's fun to be back with you guys. I think we did this, if I remember right, when I was sitting in the hotel in Salt Lake City, and right now I'm sitting at the Aria Hotel in Vegas. Getting ready for this one tomorrow night. Have some league meetings this afternoon, the commissioner's dinner tonight, and man, am I grateful and thankful to be a part of this sucker tomorrow night.
Be grateful and thankful that you're already there and you're not having to drive through Utah. We've got a huge snowstorm coming through, so I'm trying to get out of here tonight, Brock, to get down there. It's going to be ugly.
Ooh. Is that how long of a drive is it from Salt Lake without weather?
6 hours.
Without weather,
it's 6 hours. We just talked to our lead meteorologist here in the state, and he said add 2 hours if you decide to leave after 6 o'clock this evening. It's going to be really ugly. So we got a lot of late arrivals that are coming down, Brock.
Yeah, well, all of you Ute fans, you travel safely. It's beautiful here. I think it'll near 60 degrees today, and yeah, this is just going to be a terrific matchup, guys, as I just am studying and digging into this more and more. And obviously, I think this is there's familiarity. And I think this is the first time in my 14 years of calling games where I have a repeat game, a rematch. I've had a lot of repeat teams. Obviously, this year, I think I had TCU 3 times, Oregon 3 times. But to actually have a rematch for the first time is a unique spot for me. And I think we'll just add yet another layer on, you know, and that was the game of the year. I mean, it was a remarkable, remarkable game, week 7, and I don't anticipate this being different. I think this is going to be a tremendous game tomorrow night.
So in your opinion, when you analyze and you look at the film, are they similar, or have there been subtle and yet very important changes to both these teams coming into this rematch?
No, I think over the course of a long season, there are some differences. And I think the health is probably the biggest. And we'll meet with Kyle and staff tonight and try to get a little feel. And I can already anticipate decision for Dalton and the game time decision for Clark and probably limited practice work this week. I know nobody there gets any chance to really watch practice and see what's going on. Cam Rising is not 100%. That's noticeable on tape the last 5 weeks. he was more than 100% that night in Salt Lake, certainly the first three quarters before that injury that hobbled him to his knee. So there's no Tavion Thomas, obviously. On their side, there's no Travis Dye, obviously. But I would say on paper, they are the healthier team as far as their injury front goes. And I can't say the same about Utah, especially offensively. I think defensively, as I said, you'll have to watch Clark, and he is so valuable as he moved around in that first matchup and played nickel and played corner, and if he's healthy, can do the same tomorrow night. But that would be, Scotty, the biggest, and I'm not saying anything you don't know, but that would be the biggest area we will be watching in pregame and leading up to the kickoff.
So, Brock, have you had more than one opportunity to call a Cam Rising game? If so, please mention that. And then give us your thoughts on Cam Rising, the time that you saw him on the field against USC, which I thought was one of his better games.
I'd have to say that's the best I've ever seen him play. Statistically speaking, it was all career highs in yards, three rushing touchdowns. I saw Cam, I had Utah the year before, I believe twice, when you guys annihilated Colorado and somebody else earlier in the year. And, you know, the one number that surprises me, and we get all these numbers, you know, the Pro Football Focus folks and second, you know, Next Level Stats guys, it surprises me that they how little play action they do. And I think some of that was because of the lack of run game, maybe in the first half of the season, or the disappointment in some of the run game in the first half of the season. But a lot of this falls right on number seven's shoulders, and he is unflappable. He handles everything that's asked of him. I think he sees the field beautifully. That Oregon game, and I don't understand. I'm going to have to rewatch that one tonight and try to get a little more of a feel. Because I had Oregon three times this year, and that is not a defense that really did what they did to Cam to anybody else, certainly in the Pac-12. I mean, they were a mess defensively. So, obviously, they flushed all of that versus a terrible, terrible Colorado team. But, yeah, his health and his movement, I am sure that he will do whatever it's going to take tomorrow night. But his legs were a factor the first time around. His scrambling was a factor. His extending plays was a factor, just like the dude on the other side is. And he's just a gamer. And there's a lot of guys that throw it prettier. There's guys that have a better body that, you know, are much more fluid. But the dude absolutely wins. And he reminds me of some former NFL teammates I had and guys that stuck around for a long time because they knew what they were and they knew what they weren't. And I think number seven knows exactly what he's capable of doing.
Brock, you were kind enough to join us as we preview the Utah-USC game as the Utes trying to pick up back-to-back Pac-12 championship games. Tavion Thomas didn't have a huge game in that game against USC, 8 carries, 38 yards. Obviously, he's out of the equation now. Outside and a quarterback that I think we can all, you know, safely say is not 100%, or at least not what he was against USC. So how concerned are you with the Utah running game against the USC defense, which hasn't been great this year?
Yeah, not terribly concerned because that front seven for SC is not a dominant crew. The Dalton Kincaid is going to be an enormous part of that, of the run game, of the passing game, of what USC is capable of doing. Because if Dalton can't go, I think that group will feel much, much more comfortable playing man. And even if he does go, they're going to play man and have to help, you know, with a safety or a nickel or a bracket in some way or another lurk defender. But that is an enormous one that affects both the passing game, obviously, but I think the run game as well. Because if they don't, you know, have to commit resources to Dalton Kincaid in that matchup and they get another body, a plus one in the box around, you know, Bernard, around Jackson, around Glover, then that's going to help them. And, you know, it was telling in that first matchup, Cam ran it 11 times. Some of those were designs, like the power run for the two-point conversion. The four games that have followed, he missed one. The four that followed that he started and played, just 13 runs. So 11 on that night, 13 the last 4 weeks. I think tomorrow night, because of Kincaid, because of Thomas, because of what's going to be asked of him, I get a sense it might be a double-digit night for Rising, and he's just going to have to battle through whatever he's fighting with that knee.
Brock, what's more impressive to you, the 27 turnovers that USC has forced, 8 fumbles, 19 interceptions, or the fact that they've set an NCAA record only giving up the ball 4 times in turnovers? What's a more impressive number?
Yeah, I think the latter, to be honest with you. You know, they are a spot drop team defensively, hands, and it's why they give up a lot of yards. I mean, they drop into areas of the field, and when they're in their zone, and it's allowed for tips and overthrows, and they're small. You know, it is a group that the five on the back end are 6 foot and a buck 80, and that's why Dalton had just a monster night in Salt Lake City. So, you know, they play to that strength. They're a bunch of DBs and corners playing safeties and guys that do have good ball skills. So I don't diminish that amount of takeaways because that is a remarkable number, 19 interceptions of those 26. But to give the ball away only four times in 12 games is insanity. I mean, you see teams in one night give it away. I threw five picks in an Apple Cup in 1997. So, you know,
we didn't need to mention that. We didn't mean it.
Yeah, I mean, I balls get tipped. You get hit, yep. Fumble. Ball pops up in the air. I mean, all turnovers and giveaways are not created equally. They come in different varieties. But to have four in 12 games, three picks, and just one fumble is and will be studied by everybody in college football. And, you know, it's not as if SC spends, you know, four periods of practice working on ball security. They do it every day. It is a focal point, but it takes maturity. It takes veteran players. It takes, you know, a lot of football IQ, and they've got that offensively. And obviously the QB is pretty stinking special.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaking of that QB, still just a true sophomore, but if the rules were changed and he was allowed to enter the NFL draft right now, would he be your number one overall pick?
I think he would be. Yeah, I think he would be. He and obviously Bryce down at Bama, Stroud would be in that conversation, the 2D linemen down south, Jalen Carter at Georgia, and Will Anderson at Bama. I think those would be, you know, all contenders for that. But, you know, what makes this guy different is over the years we have seen and watched a lot of evolution of dual threat quarterbacks. And we have seen some that can run it and throw it. But most of them have a strength one way or the other, right? I mean, most of them, yeah, okay, Lamar Jackson's a better runner than he is thrower. And you know what? Russell Wilson, except for this year, was a, you know, better passer than runner. But they could do both of those things. This guy right now, especially in the short, in the intermediate passing game with his run game, does both flawlessly. That's why he's got 44 touchdowns. He has got 4.4 speed. We met with SC yesterday. And I, you know, in this day and age, it's not only the 40 time, they wear these catapult systems that measure miles per hour, right? And we see those at times, and you can see those numbers in NFL stadiums, especially. They all have the technology. Well, you get to 21, 22 miles an hour, you're uniquely fast, and that's where he is. He has unique top-end wide receiver running back speed at 22 miles an hour. And then in the short and the intermediate passing game, he is dynamite. The deep ball, that is still the issue. And can Morgan Scalley and crew take away those underneath throws? Can they force him to push the ball down the field? I mean, those numbers are real. That is the one area of growth that he has to have. And certainly when he goes to the NFL level a year plus from now, he's going to have to grow and develop. But that will be one of the keys, as is caging him in. You know, it's a term that Kyle uses, and it's appropriate. I mean, you have got to keep him between the tackles. And I don't think in my 14 years of calling college football, I have ever seen anybody with the athletic arrogance that he displays in that pocket. He just darts in, he darts out. He kind of sniffs for trouble. And then he's just got this, you know, athletic arrogance to believe he can get out of, like a Houdini, everything that you put him in. Utah got him four times the last time, got him three times in the second half, which is another factor in why they won that game. And they're going to have to create negative plays and get him down to the ground at least two or three times in the same variety tomorrow night.
Brock, what are your thoughts? I mean, you and I go back old school college football, played at the same time, played against each other. and then eventual teammates with the Colts. It was a lot of fun. But about the same era, probably some similar feelings, but your thoughts on 12 USC starters being transfer players, including a coach that came in brand new, kind of a whole overhaul of what USC has done. How do you feel about that, and are we going to see more of this in college football where we see a four-win team turn into a contender in a given year?
I think you're going to see boom or bust, and I think Michigan State's an example of that. A season ago, it was, oh my gosh, look at these guys, you know, Mel Tucker and Ken Walker, and they went from 2-3 wins to 10 wins and New Year's Six Bowl, and those guys exit stage right, and all of a sudden you win 5 games, and you're not going to a bowl. And you're going to see some of that volatility in some of these programs. You know, I asked Matt Campbell exactly that, Hans, last week, and coach at Iowa State, playing TCU. TCU had 20 FBS transfers on their roster, along with 12 JUCO transfers. Those are not all in one year, but over the last couple years, 20, and Iowa State had two. And I just said, is that sustainable, Matt? And he just said, you know, I hope that I can continue to do it the way I've always done it, because I love taking 17 and 18-year-old youngsters and making them 22 and 23-year-old grown men who come out equipped for much more of life, not just football. And I appreciate that, and I hope that never goes away, and I hope there are programs that are still capable of doing that, Hans, and I think there will be. But there's no question in the marketplace, and bang for the buck, and the Matt Rule to Nebraska and some of the other big name hires, Fickell to Wisconsin, will obviously look at Michigan State in 21, will look at USC in 22 and say there is a model. There is an opportunity, and you can turn it with the right people faster than you've ever been able to turn it before.
Brock, you were kind enough to join us. Now, let's say USC wins this game and the Rose Bowl has its options. In your opinion, and I think we all know what direction the Rose Bowl is going to go, but do you, I mean, would you put Utah in as a second place team, or would you go to Washington and put the Huskies in there? And I know, you know, it's okay. You can be biased if you'd like to on this answer.
Yeah. Well, I just think with four losses at that point, yeah. I don't think it's a debate, you know. I mean, that Oregon loss, I think, kind of sealed that fate, much like the ASU loss for Washington sealed the fate of them, you know, losing the tiebreaker to Utah and not playing in this game tomorrow night, because Washington is unbelievably hot. I mean, their offense and Michael Penix and what he has done in the second half of this season, really all season long for Penix, but defensively getting just enough to win up there at Oregon and at Wazoo and take their game on the road. An undefeated season at home, a brand that would travel, a young man in Penix and a coach they just rewarded in DeBoer, who is a tremendous football coach. Yeah, I think that would be a 10-2 and ranked somewhere around the top 10. They're 12 now. A Utah loss inevitably would drop them below. I can't imagine that going any other direction than the purple and gold getting down there. And it may be Penn State and the Rose Bowl saying, you know what, we've had Ohio State there a few years in a row, and their players will probably opt out, and why don't we get a Penn State in a top 10 matchup and go in that direction. But a lot of football has got to be played before then, boys, and they're going to be 60 minutes as I'm looking out at this stadium from my hotel room tomorrow night that will make those decisions for those decision makers.
Before I let you go, you're obviously connected like crazy in the Pac-12. How appealing is that Colorado job? And, you know, we talk about teams that can turn things around really quickly, but how difficult is it to try to turn that ship around and get it going in the right direction?
Yeah, that's a brutally difficult job. I mean, what was the number? You guys may know this because they just played last week, but I think it's something like one winning season since 2002.
Yeah.
The one year they played in this championship game against Washington with Mike McIntyre and just had a remarkable season. I think I may be wrong on that, and your audience can correct me and tweet me, but I think it's something like one winning season since 2002. So that is a job that many have tried to take on and have lost the battle to. That is not an appealing job, unfortunately, with some of the decisions that they have made and made just the difficulties they've made on the transfer portal, on academics, on everything else. That is an upper campus that has got to make a decision, an administration that's got to make a decision. Now, they offer Prime the job. He's obviously sitting on that and a few others like South Florida, and he'll play his game this weekend, and we'll see. If they were to land him, I don't think it's an easy job, but it would be a fascinating one to cover and watch for you guys and for me and for everybody in college football to see him if he were to pull that trigger. But I think he's a pretty wise guy. I think he's got a lot of people around him. I think he will have many other options. And unless he gets guarantees from a transfer portal situation, an academic situation, a grad transfer situation, an NIL situation to make the playing field a little bit more level, I think prime time will dance somewhere else.
Well, Brock, we appreciate your time. Thanks for joining us. Have a great call, and look forward to catching up again here very soon.
Thanks, brother.
You bet. You all travel safe, you Utes fans. We got to see you down here tomorrow night for a good one. Look forward to it.
You got it. Brock Huard on the call. And, of course, you can also hear him on the radio in Seattle in our Bonneville family station, 710 up there in Seattle. Does a great job there.
Two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.